honor for feeding our phone volunteers. Thanks to all who work together to help WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm Weezer Muntali, host of Africa Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
To turn it around. If we all could love one another, all the world could be as one. Just take time to love one another, all the world could be as one. Black man, white man, standing together, no more fighting to be done. Yellow, red man, dancing together, all the world could be at one.
It's the light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. Oh, it's the light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. It's the light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Oh, everywhere I go, Lord, I'm gonna let it shine. Oh, everywhere I go, Lord, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, Lord, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it go. I've got the light of freedom. I'm gonna let it shine. Oh, I've got the light of freedom. I'm gonna let it shine. I've got the light of freedom. I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it show.
Welcome to a very special edition of To Heal DC. This is Joni Eisenberg, and I'm joined with Chuck. Good morning, Chuck.
Morning, Joni.
And we have Fannie Lou Hamer welcoming us into this very special show. Despite all the very serious troubles in the world, we're still going to let our light shine. And we have two people going to help us keep that light shining. We are dedicating this program today, July 15th, 2024, to Joyce and Dory Ladner, who just won a very special award in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And we're also joined today by Frank Smith. And let me just give a very brief introduction to both Joyce and Frank, although many listeners know them very well, but some don't. Joyce Ladner was born in Mississippi, a little bit after Dory Ladner. Some things you may not know about Joyce, in addition to being a sociologist, she was the vice president for academic affairs at Howard from 1990 to 94, interim president of Howard from 94 to 95. 97, she was named the Washingtonian of the Year by the Washingtonian Magazine for her work in education. And, of course, we're going to be talking about all the very important things she did with her sister, Dory. Frank, when he asked what his occupation is, he said he's a civil rights activist, born in Georgia. We're going to be hearing from both Joyce and Frank about what was going on in Mississippi in 1964 and before and after. Frank was very active with SNCC, and I'm going to say, and I'm always shocked, Chuck, so many people, even older people, do not know what SNCC is or was. Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. We're going to be calling it SNCC throughout the show, but it's important that folks know that history. Frank moved to D.C. in 68. He served on the city council for four terms from 1982 to 1998. And in 98, he started one of the most special things, I think, in the country, the African-American Civil War Museum. So we're very proud to have Joyce and Frank on today again to talk about the award that Joyce and Joy just won, and also some of the history of SNCC, and talk about what are the lessons that SNCC has for us today. So let's start with the award that Joyce and Dory received on Dory's birthday a couple weeks ago, Friday, June 28th in Hattiesburg. And I'm going to ask Frank to start, and then, of course, Joyce is going to jump in. Tell our listeners why they certainly, Joyce and Dory, deserve that award that they won, the Freedom Trail Award.
Yeah, first of all, let me say good morning to Joyce and to you, Joni, and to my good friend Chuck. Chuck, good morning. I'm actually in Georgia. Most people think I was born in Mississippi. I was born in Georgia. I came here for a family reunion over the weekend. It's one of the joys of my life is to show up and spend the weekend with my family. And Chuck and Joyce last weekend, Chuck Neblett, one of the Freedom Singers, who is still around, a little bit older than I am, drove down to my family reunion from Tennessee, he and his wife and his son, Corey. And so it was a special treat. I didn't know they were coming. They showed up at the last minute. We were able to spend the day with them. My family got to meet them. So we're living this history from day to day. And but Joyce and Dory have received a special honor. You know, a few Sundays ago in our church Sunday school Bible reading, it said a prophet is not a prophet in his own land, and that is too often the case that we become famous and important somewhere other than where we were born and raised, and very often the people in our own communities, our family members, even or local politicians, whatever, are not willing to pay tribute to us. To people because they think what they do is controversial. I mean, that was true of Jesus Christ too. So it's a special honor for Dory and for Joyce to be able to be honored in their own hometown. And to receive this honor and to be placed in such a way that in the future when people pass that way, when people pass that way and see this marker, they're going to say, here lies a marker to somebody who made a difference in this town and in this country and in their life. And if they were able to do it, maybe I can pick myself up from whatever it is that's surrounding me and do something with it. So it's special for them to be able to do this in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Mississippi was a tough place to be. It was a tough place. We had not only Emmett Till killed down there, that good friend Meg Evers, Dorian, and Joyce were very, very close to Meg Evers. Saw him at dinner with him the night before he was killed, and so they were close to him. They saw him get killed there. They saw other people get set up and jailed and all that stuff. And yet they persevered. They kept on pushing. They kept on marching. And kept on praying. And kept on organizing. And sooner or later, we were able to turn Mississippi around to a great extent. Where now Mississippi has more black elected officials than any state in the Union. The mayor of Jackson, Mississippi, an African American named Lumumba. So it's a great story, and I'm glad that they were able to receive this honor. So I'm glad to be here with them this morning. Congratulations to Dory and Joyce. May God continue to bless you, and may you continue to be a blessing to your country and to your people.
Well, thank you very much, Frank. And thanks to Joni and Chuck for organizing, having us on today. About almost 2 years ago, the Mississippi Council on the Humanities contacted us to ask if we would agree to one of the markers being placed in our hometown. These markers have been in existence for a few years, and they are placed in they're put in places where important events in the civil rights movement occurred, or where individuals who did important things in the movement lived. So this is, Dora had gotten sick, but she's not real sick yet. She participated in the planning of the market by helping to design the text, to create the text, and she selected some of the pictures that are on it. To date, there are, I believe, over 20 such markers around the state. They're placed in front of Mega Evers' house. Vernon Damer, who was killed because of his civil rights activism in Hattiesburg, near his home, and so on. After Dory passed, it was then, you know, we were trying to decide what day it should be on, and I said, let's do it on the 28th of June, which would be her 82nd birthday. And that's what happened. My son and grandson, and then Dora's daughter and grandson, we all hopped a plane and went down to Mississippi. And it was a beautiful ceremony. It was as hot as, the heat index was about 110 degrees, so we made it short and sweet. It was really arranged by the Black councilwoman for the area in which it was placed. And I also asked that we place it in front of where the old civil rights office was on Mobile Street. The Woods guest home, Mrs. Wood, ran a hotel that you've all heard of, the Chitlin Circuit, where entertainers like Bobby Bland and James Brown and all of the others performed at local nightclubs. And there were a few places they could stay, but Mrs. Wood's hotel was one of those places. But what was so beautiful about this event was that it was also, we also placed the marker near one of the benches that Toni Morrison donated to communities around the country. And these benches are intended to be a place where you can sit and reflect. So there's a lot of history placed within those few yards. My all of my siblings who are still living, except my brother in Ohio, were there. My high school classmates came out, and that was a special treat. And we have lots and lots of relatives in and around Hattiesburg. They were all there. The mayor of Hattiesburg, who was white, came and gave remarks. Now, that would have been totally unheard of back in the day during the movement. So one of the things that I said was that Dory always came back home. And her daughter said the same thing, that no matter where we were, we always went back. And just as an aside, mother always had a baked, just out of the oven, peach cobbler waiting for me on the stove when I walked in from New York, where I was living, or D.C., or Senegal, or wherever I was living. And it was just, you know, filled with so many warm memories. I wanted my son, who used to go to Hattiesburg when he was a kid, and especially my grandson, who went when he was a little baby, to see where the grandmothers came from, and the mother came from. So I took them to our homestead, and I took them to the school I went to. And that made so much difference. They ran in the yard, and you know, just as kids want to do, when they saw my school, I said, "This is a nice school." And I said, "It sure is. It's been well preserved, and so on." But what was most important was, as Frank said, to see history, not history, but to see people who grew up in that area and who made contributions. Like Dory and I joined the NAACP Youth Council in 58 or 59. I have a copy of a letter I wrote to Medgar Evers, and his response came back to me when I wrote him on behalf of the Youth Council to ask if he could come to our next meeting. He wrote and said he couldn't come on the date we requested, but he could come on another date. And he did. We had met Megger some years earlier when a member of our church and her brother, Eileen Beard, and her brother, Mr. Damer, would take us up to Jackson to the statewide NAACP meetings. We were kids, like 12, 13, 14, and all of those events, you know, just had such a remarkable impact on our lives. We didn't know how we were going to change things, but we pledged each other that we surely would. So I was overwhelmed by these events coming full circle.
Yes, and we are very proud of you. And Chuck, you could jump in and ask a question. I'm just going to re-announce we're honoring Joyce and Dory Ladner today as they receive the historic Freedom Trail marker on Dory's birthday. Of course, Dory being very much a part of the WPFW community, she would call many of the engineers and hosts on the radio and talk with them. Of course, she could be heard every Saturday on the House of Soul with Lance Reynolds and often with us. So we are proud of our family member, Dory and Joyce Ladner. Chuck, do you have a question? And of course, we'd like Joyce to talk about some of the couple of things that you're proud of that you and Dory accomplished over the years in Mississippi. But Chuck?
Yeah, were you able to get to any of the SNCC events in Mississippi while you were down there, Joyce?
No. No. Frank was there. It was up in northern Mississippi, and I arrived. Hattiesburg is in southern Mississippi near the Gulf Coast.
We'll have time for Frank to share some of that a little later, because it was a historic time for SNCC. But Joyce, because you know we have listeners who do not know some of the things you did. Maybe you or Frank could just list, of course, there are many, many things, but list, you talked about Medgar Evers, but share one or two other things, and Frank, perhaps you could as well.
Well, I'm sorry, you had something else to say, Joni?
You know, just things that you and Dory did when you were younger there in Mississippi that really made a difference. And we've talked about it often on the radio, but just share with the new listeners a few.
Well, we got expelled from Jackson State College. We used to visit Meg Evers' office that was down the street from the college. And on one such visit, he told us that he had a secret. We couldn't tell anyone, but there was going to be a sit-in in Mississippi soon. There had been sit-ins in all the southern states except Mississippi. And he said, when it occurs, I want you to organize the students on campus to have a silent protest on behalf of the students. And we waited for, you know, some word of what happened and when it was going to happen. And somehow, I think I remember that we got the word from Medgar that there was going to be a sit-in on a particular day. And I remember staying, cutting class all morning to wait to hear on the news where the sit-in had occurred and so on. And by the time we went to lunch, I mean, they were arrested in late morning, as I recall. But we went to lunch in the cafeteria of the college, and everybody was just outraged over these students being arrested. And it was surprising to me that they had been arrested at the public library. The NAACP was of the mind that the only important protests were those that you could sue, file a lawsuit against the local government for having arrested you. The rationale was that black people paid taxes just like white people did, and we should not be prevented from using that main public library that was far superior to the library of the black community. But by evening, we decided that we would have a brief prayer meeting, and I think it was around 6 or 7 o'clock. So when I'm trying to figure out how to explain this, it makes sense, but it doesn't make sense. The women were not allowed out of the dorm after 6 o'clock, and we were supposed to go out of our dorms to the library. And that the guys were supposed to gather first, and then because they had all kinds of freedom that the women students didn't have. And what happened is that we were supposed to see this large group of people in front of the library. We were supposed to stop. I said it doesn't make much sense to have to go through all this convoluted way of organizing it. But when we all assembled, about 700 students, and Emmett Burns, who was a member of Omega Psi Phi and was a minister, was in the middle of his prayer, asking God to protect these students who were in jail overnight for staging a sit-in. And all of a sudden, we heard this loud noise saying, stop this. Get out of here. Get out of here. Go back to your dorms. And we turned and saw that it was the president of the college, Jacob Reddix. And he was flailing his arms and just going mad. And he went from one group of students to another. He came, for some reason, he stopped when he saw my two roommates, Margaret and Eunice, and he grabbed Eunice by the shoulder and knocked her to the ground. And that made all of us livid with anger. We were very, very, very angry. And the Jackson police, the white police, were on campus by then.
and we were told to disperse. And of course, we didn't want to. So we got back to our dorms, and soon a dean came over to our room and told Eunice that she had, the president had expelled her, President Jacob Reddix had expelled her, and she had to be out of the dorm before daybreak. That was one of the most cruel things that I can recall. Mm-hmm. The president refused to meet with her parents when they got there. They had to drive from Ocean Springs, which is close to New Orleans. This was a long distance, you know, on these one-lane roads. And they requested to see him, and he wouldn't even meet with them. So, and we were telling her, Eunice, you shouldn't go anywhere because you didn't do anything wrong. But such were the ways of blacks whose authority and power came from the white people in charge. President Reddix was supposed to keep the order, keep the peace, and he had failed to do that. So his option was to shut everything down. But the next morning, we marched, actually in the middle of a march, to go to the courthouse when the students were to be arraigned. We came upon a roadblock, and all of a sudden I heard these cracking sounds. And I said, oh, Lord, they're trying to kill us. I thought it was gunshots, and it turned out to be tear gas. Mm-hmm. Dory had a scar on her back for the rest of her life, and on the top of her head, too, from the tear gas. But they brought the police dogs also. The first time I'd seen a police dog. And it was just horrible. And the dogs were chasing us. And we were running into different homes of people. One group of students were hit by the owner of a funeral parlor, put them in the embalming room, and he said, police are not going to come in here. We eventually made our way back to the campus, and only to be dismissed the next day for an early spring break. I also was locked up, went to jail for several days, almost a week, as I recall, I went to church with one of my white professors, and I was locked up for disturbing the peace. That was the phrase they used on all of our civil rights events. Those two events that I recall very clearly.
It's very, very important that you share that with us. Again,
and of course, Joni, let me just say that one of the reasons why Joyce and Dory are being celebrated today in Hattiesburg is because all this, the details of this civil rights demonstration, the jailing, the tear gases, and all that stuff, the result of all of that is that Mississippi now, that just the whole nation really got rid of those segregation laws. Those laws were all over the country. They were in here in Washington, D.C. also, where black people had to go to certain schools, white people went to other schools. People could go into some places in Washington, D.C., to buy things, but they couldn't try them on because they couldn't go into the same dressing room that white people had gone into. So those laws were all over the country, but thank God the effort in Mississippi, and this was part of what SNCC did, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and the NAACP working together, we were able to change the nation. So how do you change the nation? You eventually get the country to pass something called the 1964 Civil Rights Act that outlawed discrimination in employment, in public accommodations, that's the restaurants and stuff. It also set up some affirmative action programs so people could get hired in jobs that they couldn't work in before. So That's not a surveillance plane that you hear there. I'm sitting on my brother's patio here in Newland, Georgia. And but I wanted to share that story because, you know, because I'm sure that people wonder, well, how does this all tie together? How does this make sense in the world we live in today? The fact of the matter is that what SNCC did in Mississippi, what Dorrie and Joyce and others did, changed the United States of America. And eventually, Dorrie and Joyce come from Mississippi to Washington to work on the March on Washington in 1963. Joyce and Dorrie both live in the D.C. I know for those years I was on the city council here in Washington. I represented Ward 1, which is where Dorrie lived, at Harvard Hall, where where she was living when she passed away. In Harvard Hall in Ward 1. And so eventually their work carried to Washington, where we also, in Washington, D.C., helped to start the Free D.C. movement. Because when we first got to Washington, people in D.C. didn't have the right to vote for anything. They had an appointed mayor. They had an appointed city council. So we worked hard. Dorrie, Joyce, and others worked hard to get the right to vote, limited home rule that we have today in Washington, D.C. So this made a difference to the country. It also made a difference to our native Washington, D.C.
Hold on, George. We need to do a station ID. You're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM. This is Joni and Chuck to Heal D.C. We are honoring Joyce and Dorrie Ladner today. They won a very special award in Hattiesburg, the Freedom Trail Marker. And we're talking to Frank Smith. And Joyce, just let me say, I still take some direction from your sister, Dorrie Ladner, who I can hear her loudly telling me to make sure we let people know that July 17th is Lawrence Guillot's birthday, born in 1939. Dorrie was very close to Guillot, as was I. He was the director of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party in 1964. He was honored last year in 2023 with a marker in Mississippi as well. And he was involved with many of the things that Frank just mentioned. Lawrence Guillot, so we lift him up today. I also want, of course, lift up Marion Barry. I've spoke to even older people. Some people maybe in their 50s did not know about SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and its relationship to Marion Barry. So as Frank and Joyce can say, Marion Barry was requested or ordered to come to D.C. to organize for statehood. So, and of course, many people do know what Marion did. I want to honor one other more recent person we lost last week. But Joyce, go ahead. You want to jump in, or Frank?
I was going to say that the marker for Guillot is in his hometown of Pas Christian on the Gulf Coast. In fact, we passed by it when we were down there 2 weeks ago, and they placed the marker there. I don't know its exact location, but they had the ceremony during his family reunion. So his daughter said that was very special to them.
Yes, and Frank, do you want to say anything else about Guillot? Again, he was very much a part of the WPFW family and the D.C. Family as well.
Well, you know, Lawrence Guillot was a special person. There's no question about it. He was born in Mississippi, as people already pointed out, but he lived his latter part of his life in Washington. He lived probably more years in Washington, D.C. than he did in Mississippi. That was true of all of us. Actually, I was born in Georgia, but I spent more years in Washington, D.C., because I moved here in 1968, and I really spent in Georgia. So that was true of Guillot, too. And so his big contribution here, you all noted that these people, and let me say this to shout out to Joyce and Dorrie about this, because nobody mentioned this, but we were part of all of these movements, the anti-war movement in 1968, SNCC was a part of that movement. We were part of the Free South Africa movement. Many of us were arrested at the South African embassy trying to get freedom for South Africa, which eventually elected, of course, Nelson Mandela. Now they got a sparkling country over there. in South Africa. We were part of that Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. Went to Atlantic City that helped get the 65 Voting Rights Act passed. And as we sit here today thinking about what's going to happen in November of this year, about how important it was to register all of those voters so that we could have enough voters to play a role in this election coming up in the fall of this year, in November. And God knows, I hope that everybody sitting and listening in the sound of our voice will go out and vote this year in the name of Lawrence Guillot and Fannie Lou Hamer and Dory Latner and all those people who died and suffered, went to jail. All of those people, now is your time to show up and show out. So you make sure you vote. If you don't vote, you're going to have to answer to these people in the judgment. I'm going to tell you that right now. You're going to have to answer to them in the judgment if you don't go out there and exercise your right to vote. So I'm telling you that. In case you didn't know that, you heard it from me. So you better get out there and vote.
I'm sorry. I want to just honor a recent ancestor who was very close to many of us, and there will be a special tribute to him in the future, and that is Keith Silver, who is known as being called the Foot Soldier for Justice. He was very much a D.C. statehood soldier, close to Attorney Johnny Barnes, very close with Dick Gregory, Martin Luther King, Walter Fauntroy, on and on, board member for Stand Up for Democracy in D.C. He just left us, I believe it was July 5th, so we'll be honoring him, but I wanted to let listeners know who might not have heard. Go ahead, Chuck.
Let me ask Joyce and Frank each a question, but first let me just say that Marion Barry was actually the first president of SNCC. But my question to you, Joyce and Frank, was, how did family, your mom and people, deal with your civil rights activities? Where were they at in all of this?
Well, mother would say, if y'all don't stop this, they're going to burn my house down. And then she'd kind of smile a little bit, but then she never told us not to go. Never. I remember one time, she told me, and 30 years later, she said, you know, the FBI went to Bill on his job. That was my stepfather. He was a diesel mechanic. And they went to him and told him to get you and Dot out of the movement. And he said, well, I don't receive messages from anyone about my daughters, and I certainly don't carry messages to them. So if you got something to say to my daughters, you go and say it to them. Little acts like that may appear small, but to have a black man stand up to the FBI in the early 60s in Mississippi was quite extraordinary. I wanted to say also that the first of these civil rights markers to be placed out of state will be unveiled very soon. I don't know the date, in Atlantic City, New Jersey, in commemoration of the Freedom Democratic Party's challenge to the all-white Mississippi delegation at the 64 convention. And I think that's important to know that the movement didn't occur only other. Impact of the movement, as Frank was saying earlier, reverberated far beyond the places in the South where these acts were carried out.
Absolutely. Some of us who are old enough remember us. We saw it on TV.
Yes.
Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. Before I knew any of you, I saw you all on the national TV. Frank? Let's talk about a little bit more about SNCC. First of all, I know you were down there. Perhaps you want to share a little bit about the 60th anniversary of Freedom Summer. But in addition, you know, let's try to squeeze in a little more about the role that SNCC has played in D.C., but also what are the lessons of SNCC for us moving forward. But share a little bit about the gathering that SNCC had the other weekend.
Okay, so yeah, well, we about a month ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago, SNCC had a 60th anniversary of the summer of 1964. It was held in Indianola, Mississippi, which is about 5 or 6 miles from Fannie Lou Hamer's hometown, which is Ruleville, Mississippi. And you might say this reunion was probably all about Fannie Lou Hamer. You could have called it the Fannie Lou Hamer reunion. But not only did I go back down there, and as you all probably can tell, if I'm celebrating something that happened 60 years ago, I was a young man then, 20 years old. That means I'm 80-something now. Y'all must know that already. We went back. Some of us were in wheelchairs, and some of us were on canes. And my arthritis treated me pretty good those days, so I wasn't hobbling very much. But we were able to celebrate. And one of the things that I did, Joyce, which I had never done, I was in Mississippi with SNCC for 6 years, from 1962 to 1968. I traveled around the whole Delta where Emmett Till was killed and brutalized. And although I had seen this photograph in Jet magazine when I was in junior high school here in Newnan, Georgia, where I'm sitting now, I never went in Mississippi. I never thought about going to the place. When I was there last few weeks ago, we took a tour that took me to the place where Emmett Till was actually killed, where they shot him, and where he breathed his last breath. I stood on the ground where he spent his last hours. I don't know what he was thinking at the time, but I wanted to thank him because he actually excited a generation of young civil rights workers. And for people who think that these killings and brutalization and jailings can stop the movement, they don't stop the movement, you all. They just make us mad and make us more irate and more willing to go out and march and picket and demonstrate and do whatever we have to do. So I wanted to thank Emmett Till. In case nobody had ever done this, I wanted to thank him. I stood there in the doorway and looked at that with tears in my eyes, and I said, I want to thank you. Because I promised when I was in the eighth grade, if there was ever a time when I can do something about trying to redeem what happened to him, I was going to do it. And I'm sure I've heard Joyce say this. I've heard Doris say this. All these people at SNCC who said they got their first inspiration from Emmett Till. So that's what I did for the 60th anniversary of the summer of 64. I took that bus ride and walked up to that door, stood there, picked up some of that sand in my hand. Because I wanted to do that for Emmett Till. Now I feel like I've gone full circle. Maybe I can be at rest as I try to finish off this museum here in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. So I call ours the Emmett Till generation. That we were all, once we saw that picture of his mutilated body on the cover of Jet magazine, and his mother refused to allow the embalmers to do any corrective surgery or whatever on his face. And she said, I want the world to see what they did to my baby. And that picture on the cover of Jet inspired a generation. I didn't know. I was 11, I think. And I said, I don't know how we're going to change things, but we surely are. We will get even with these people who did this to him.
Absolutely. And it was thanks to Lawrence Guillot, who influenced a young man named Keith Beauchamp, the reason that the film about Emmett Till came out, I think it was 2 years ago now, and Guillot stayed on Keith and told Keith he better focus on Emmett Till, and he did. So Guillot played a role in that film. I want to make sure we have just less than 10 minutes left. I want to make sure, Frank and Joyce, that we spend a moment talking about SNCC's impact on D.C., which, of course, we could spend hours on that, but also the lessons of SNCC for, and Frank, of course, started to mention it about voting. Why is SNCC important for us today, for people to know about what SNCC was? But, Frank, if you could just kind of briefly, I hate to say briefly, but tell people, I know that was one of the reasons I stayed here in D.C. when I found out about you all in SNCC. You had a tremendous influence, and you still do, in the city of D.C. So just talk a little bit about that.
Well, George, let me jump in and say a little word about this, because there are two things happening now that the public probably knows something about, both of them. One of them is we created something called a SNCC Legacy Project, where many of us who were direct, were foot soldiers, as we like to call ourselves, like Doris and Doris and others, who were foot soldiers in the civil rights movement, who now old enough with tired feet and arthritic bones and stuff like that. We are recording some of our stories, and we are doing curriculums for teachers, for schools, and those things are being put together in something called the SNCC Legacy Project, so that young people can benefit from what we did. Not only our courage, I know people think of us as courage in the face of danger, but we also were smart. We were organizing. We organized the whole state of Mississippi by congressional districts. We when they wouldn't let our people register to vote, we created our own voter registration form. And then we had people fill those forms out. And when we got to Atlantic City, we said to the National Convention, we know these people want to vote. Look at all these petitions they have signed. We had 100,000 names there, people who have said, we want to vote. They just won't let us vote. So we were very organized. And so for our young people today who have some grievances with this society, who want to make their feelings known and whatever, they can learn some lessons from how we organized. We were courageous, but you had to be a little bit smart and crafty to survive all this. Now you didn't just go out there every day walking in the face of some mob that you had to figure out how you organize. And also, we would go see about each other. I think this is the part that's hard for people to visualize. If they put Doris Ladner in a jail in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, Lawrence Guillot and Frank Smith and Stokely Carmichael and Bob Moses, we had to go see about them. If nobody else went to see about them, we had to go. And if nothing else, we get ourselves put in jail. Well, they at least have some company while they were in there. They wouldn't have to be in there by themselves. And so we would tell these people, we'll fill up your jailhouse. If you start, you better not mess with us, because if you do, we'll fill up your jailhouse. And then we'll picket your stores. And we might run some of y'all out of business. They ran that store out of business where that lady whistled at Emmett Till down. That store didn't last 3 months after that incident took place. Four people shut it down. And so there's some method to this madness. And I wanted to say that because today we face this tremendous challenge here with this society sort of sitting at a crossroad. We always seem to be facing these challenges. Let me just say it finally on this point. The black community, black people, we have lived this life of struggle, this life of protest, this life of resilience, and we have done well. The black community has progressed very much. You see it in Washington, D.C. We built the largest black middle class in the country in Washington, D.C. And now they may have all moved to PG County, but they're still middle class. They still own their homes. They're still educating their kids, and they're still doing great things. And then some of these cities, like Atlanta, Newnan's 20 miles from Atlanta now, where I'm sitting, some of these places have done really well, Jackson, Mississippi, and others. So there's a way that this makes some difference. If you got to stay at it, don't give up, don't give in. There's a way to handle all these problems. People talk about gloom and doom, but listen, our life, we have shown the reason why they put that marker up in Hattiesburg for Dorian Joyce is because their eyes have been opened to the fact that our protest movement changed this country, and it changed it for the better. And they want to put a marker that I always say these people have changed not only America, but they changed Hattiesburg, too. That's why they put the marker up down.
Well, that was well stated, Frank. the people who and SNCC were very bright people, very brilliant. Stokely was a philosophy major, as was Jean Wheeler Smith at Howard University. SNCC was founded as a result of student sit-ins from North Carolina A&T. And it was the leadership of SNCC came from, like Marion. I think Marion was a graduate student at Fisk, getting a master's in chemistry, I believe, when he joined SNCC. They were brilliant, brilliant. And we read a lot. We discussed what we read, and we had great mentors in Ella Baker and Howard Zinn and so many others. And we respected each other. We loved each other, and we respected each other. So that if I can, I have a visual image now, Frank, of being in Greenwood, Mississippi in the spring of 64 when some of you guys were arrested. And then they put out a call. The leadership of SNCC put out a call for everybody to go to Greenwood.
And I remember, I could see now, Don Harris coming, who was out in Southwest Georgia and who had been locked up the year before for treason because he was trying to register voters, he and a couple of other SNCC workers. But if something happened, everybody dropped what they were doing and went to that person's defense, went to that location, and not just went there, but we upped the ante. We brought in more people, but we also started trying to register more voters. And we didn't back down. No. No backing down, right, Frank?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Joni, let me just say, before we hang up, can I just have 1 minute to say that on July 18th at the African American Civil War Memorial, that's our anniversary. That's when we first put this memorial up for people in Washington, D.C. On July 18th is our anniversary. And this year we're having a special ceremony at the memorial. I'll be back in town tonight. So we'll get this all worked out. July 18th, which is 3 days from now, at 11 a.m., we're going to have about a half dozen people who actually were extras in the movie Glory. These are black guys who put on these uniforms, and some of whom are older than I am. So come out and spend a few time with us, hear us reminisce about the good old days, talk about our renovations and how it's going along, and get ready for the grand opening that's going to take place in the spring of next year. So I couldn't get off the air without Absolutely. Putting that little plug in and letting everybody
and Frank,
know.
What time is it going to be? That's Thursday, I believe.
It's 11 a.m. And let me just say, I talk about the African American Civil War Museum all the time. But let me just say publicly, the African American Civil War Museum is the SNCC. It's the home that it's the museum and monument that SNCC built here in Washington, D.C.
That's right.
And so our closing exhibit is called Bullets to Balance. It's about how when these soldiers leave the war, they put down their rifles, the bullets, and pick up the ballots as a way to vote and defend themselves. And that's how we defend ourselves now. And this is a message for our young people in these cities, some of whom are shooting each other for reasons that you and I doesn't make any sense to us, endangering the whole communities and endangering all of the gains that we've made. So we've got to find a way to communicate with them. And I think this is a way for us to start to communicate with them as we bring people from the D.C. public schools to our museum. So this all, I just wanted to say that because I know sometimes you know, people think, well, these guys are old. They talk about these old stories. What about today? Well, we're thinking about today, too.
And you can't separate the past from the present and the future. Joyce, you have the we have 1 minute. You have the last word.
I wanted to say that what we've been talking about may have occurred 60 years ago, but we have remained quite relevant. And we in SNCC Legacy Project work with young people today. We have conferences that are jointly organized by us and people, young people in activist organizations, and not just conferences, but ongoing activities. So we are really still on the front lines, dispensing knowledge, and not just dispensing knowledge, but also trying to remain relevant.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Joyce Ladner, thank you for Dory Ladner. Thank you, Frank Smith. Thanks, Chuck. Thank you to our wonderful engineer, Mikey. And stay tuned, and we will be, of course, bringing Joyce back, bringing Frank back as we move on into the future. I wanted to play a song by Sweet Honey, Staying Together, it's called, Doing Things Together, but we're going to stick with Fannie Lou Hamer as we go out, keeping our light shining brightly.
I'm gonna let it shine. Oh, this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it oh, everywhere I go, Lord. I'm gonna let it shine, oh, everywhere.
WPFW presents Democracy Now!'s coverage of the Republican National Convention, Monday, July 15th through Friday, July 19th at 11 a.m. It is your support that makes this possible. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
The Institute for Policy Studies, the Wallace Global Fund, and The Nation invite you to their first annual Henry A. Wallace Symposium, Countering American Fascism, Lessons from Organizing in the U.S. Heartland, on Monday, July 22nd from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Speakers include National Affairs Correspondent for The Nation, John Nichols, Salma Arias of People's Action, and IPS Executive Director Tope Falerin. That's Countering American Fascism, Lessons from Organizing in the U.S. Heartland, Monday, July 22nd, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the 14th and V Streets Busboys and Poets. More information and how to RSVP can be found online, ips-dc.org/events/Countering American Fascism. WPFW, your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, this is Miyuki. Thanks to all who contributed to or are thinking about contributing to WPFW's Relocation Fund. Your very generous donations are what make WPFW possible. Your continued support keeps us alive. Special thanks to Joyce and James Kilgore, who made it possible for our 125 Ellington Thank You gift to be available. Detailed information at WPFWFM.org. Thanks to Gloria Turner for feeding our phone volunteers. Thanks to all who work together to help WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hello, WPFW. Summertime is here. Words Beats in Life and Arts for Everybody have the event for your family and friends this season. DMV Made Festival is happening Saturday, July 27th on the National Mall, a one-day celebration of the D.C., Maryland, Virginia region, promoting the intersections of arts and culture, plus health and wellness. Featuring musical acts, Chuck Brown Band, Sweet Honey and the Rock, Substantial, Belladonna, DuPont Brass, and much more, plus four more music and dance stages, Family Fun Zone, Poetry and Storytelling Pavilion, Live Art Installations, Hands-On Workshop Tent, and Health and Wellness Pavilion. Free to the entire community. July 27th on the National Mall, 14th Street and Jefferson Drive Southwest. DMV Made Festival. Get more information and RSVP today. WBLINC.org/DMV Made.
Hi, this is Tom Cole, host of G-Strings, here on WPFW every Sunday morning. I and the rest of the station's volunteers and staff would like to invite you to join the WPFW Legacy Listener Circle by making a contribution to the station's future through your estate plan. There are a lot of ways to do that, through your IRA or retirement plan, by gifting us life insurance, or through your donor-advised fund. We'd be happy to have a confidential discussion with you as you consider a planned gift to the station. Please reach out to us at plannedgiving@wpfw.org or call us at 202-588-0999. Thank you for considering becoming a part of WPFW's future.
Peace, everyone. I'm Brother Jamil, and in the Yardbird Suites tradition established by our dear brother Asghiya Muhammad, we continue every Tuesday morning from 5 to 8, playing some things you've never heard before and also playing some old favorites. But we invite you to join us each and every Tuesday as we have an audio family reunion right here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington. Peace.